It is owned and operated by my father-in-law, Dave Bishop, and my husband, Hans, and I. We raise 15 acres of certified organic vegetables on that land, and then the rest is in pasture, row crops for our animals, and in conservation land as well.
And the majority of what you raise is being sold to individuals?
Right. So we sell at the downtown Bloomington Farmers Market, the Lincoln Farmers Market. We have a CSA program, and then we sell to local grocery stores and restaurants, but we also go up to Chicago as well.
The vegetables, fruits, what are you actually raising? What will people actually be able to get from your farm?
So they can get vegetables, fruit, flowers, honey.
What kind of vegetables?
Oh, every kind. You can imagine, except for peas and okra, because nobody wants okra, and peas are too hard to pick.
I bet Bill Davison wants okra.
I grow two okra plants to supply my okra needs.
And Bill, can you embarrass Katie a little bit? What do you think of her operation, their operation, and the produce coming from Prairie Earth Farms?
Well, it's an amazing farm. It's the kind of farm that we would like to see more of. We'd like to see more farms be able to have that level of diversity and integration. So they have livestock on their farm, they have grain crops, and then, like she described, all the vegetables that they grow. So in many ways, it's really an ideal size and diverse operation.
Why is diversity important?
Well, diversity provides resilience. So one of the big challenges that we're facing now is that in our region, we are dependent on two crops for the most part. And it's hard to negotiate pricing and get fair prices when you only grow two things.
Corn and soybeans.
Yes.
And most of which is not consumed by people?
No, it's livestock feed and ethanol for the most part.
So if Prairie Earth Farms is being run so well, Bill, and the produce coming out of there is so good, what's the problem?
There are lots of problems. And part of what we're seeing is increased competition. So the larger food system has recognized the success of CSAs over the past 30 years or so, and they have moved to capture that part of the marketplace. So now you see large chain grocery stores opening small stores that are, in some cases, called a farmer's market. And they're catering to customers that want local organic food. So people have a lot more choices now. And stores are convenient. People are usually already going there for other groceries. And so it's easier for them.
The stores are trying to cater to people who want small organic food from small local farms. But is that what the stores are actually providing?
In most cases, it is not. So if you really pay attention and you look at it, the reason those stores have succeeded and are profitable, it's because they're part of the industrial food system. So look at a label and try to figure out if you can actually determine who grew that food. In most cases, you cannot. So it is a tricky thing. They do buy local food. They buy some from Hans and Katie at Hy-Vee and other stores. But it is often a tiny percentage of what's in the store.
Tell me, Katie, about the difference between broccoli I might get, organic broccoli I might get at Hy-Vee or at Kroger, and the broccoli you're growing.
Well, mainly it's going to be taste and nutrition, and that just comes from a freshness factor. So our broccoli, when it is in a CSA box or at the farmer's market, we picked it the day before, so it still has all of its nutrients and flavor. The broccoli at the grocery store has probably been shipped across the country anywhere, I mean, I can't even imagine, Bill, 7-10 days from the date it's been picked, and that's just until it hits the store. So you rapidly lose nutrition levels in that broccoli within just a few days.
Really? I had no idea that the nutritional level of the vegetables decrease with their age. What is it vary depending upon the vegetable about how much it loses, Bill?
It is variable. So broccoli has one of the highest rates of respiration and declines the fastest, but it is a general rule for all food. The moment you pick it, it starts to age and lose nutrition.
Well, am I hearing here to a degree that local organic farmers are a victim of the organic movement's success? There's more organic vegetables available. There are multiple CSAs to which people can subscribe, several farmers markets in central Illinois. Is that part of the problem? Is just you can find the organic vegetables in all kinds of different places? Bill?
I think so. Yeah, I think it has entered the mainstream. You can find it in Walmart and in major grocery stores. It is increasing its share of the marketplace, and lots of big companies are moving to set up organic supply chains.
Are companies like Blue Apron also a sign of CSA success, Bill?
Well, it's a sign, that they recognized that it was a niche in the marketplace, and so they set out to capture part of it. And so Blue Apron is one of these meal delivery services where they will ship right to your home. And you get, I've never actually seen one, but I know you get a box that is basically set up to prepare meals. So I don't know the extent to which it's pre-chopped and prepared.
And Katie, how much do you know about these kinds of services? Like, I think another one is called Healthy Fresh, I think, Blue Apron. Is the food coming pretty much pre-cleaned, pre-chopped?
Well, the HelloFresh specifically, I believe it is pre-chopped. Blue Apron is not. You still have to prep your food, wash your food, chop it up. So it's basically like a grocery delivery service with some recipes.
Bill, how many organic farmers do you know, and how many of them are experiencing issues with declines at farmers markets and with their CSAs?
I work with hundreds of organic farmers in Illinois and across the Midwest, and I think it is safe to say almost all of them are experiencing the same decline, more or less.
So will we see a winnowing? Do you think that some of these farmers will quit? Will farmers let some fields become fallow?
We will see that, but we see that regardless of these challenges. I mean, farming is a very difficult thing to do. We're seeing it even in the large-scale row crop farms. Two years of low prices have really hurt them, and it looks like there's a third year, and so some of them are going out of business.
So what approaches have you suggested to farmers like Katie and Hans to counter some of the declining sales at farmers markets and with declining subscriptions with CSAs?
We're trying to do a lot to develop institutional markets, so we really would like to see farm-to-school develop, farm-to-institution in general, so hospitals, nursing homes, daycare, any institution like that could be sourcing local food.
What's the hurdle there? Aren't they wanting more veggies that are already ready to eat, they're already cleaned, already chopped?
That is part of it, is price is a hurdle. They often don't have the skill and equipment to do the processing and handling of the food. But we also know that it's happening. It's working around the country. There are examples in Illinois. It is possible to do this. So we really need to make progress there and find ways to make that happen.
So you're working to basically expand the market, find new places for these vegetables to be utilized.
Yes, we really need a volume to open up. Farmers, you know, can produce so much food, way more food than they can sell in many cases. And so it's easier for them if you can get a little mechanized and grow at a larger scale. Your labor costs can come down. There is some efficiency with that. And we're not necessarily out to replicate the biggest farms, but the 15 acres that Hans and Katie grow is a nice size, but you can produce a tremendous quantity of food on 15 acres.
And you've moved towards some more mechanization, haven't you, at Prairie Earth, Katie?
Yes, we just purchased a potato harvester so that we can harvest potatoes extremely quickly and then offer them to institutions at a lower price.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. We're talking with farmer Katie Bishop and U of I Extension agent Bill Davison about some of the difficulty organic farmers are facing. CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. Most people think of it as a food subscription. Katie, how does your CSA work?
So we have 150 members in Bloomington and in the Lincoln area. They provide us with funding upfront by paying their deposit for the CSA in the fall, and this allows us to cover our seed costs and also allows us to have those guaranteed sales in the summer when we should be focusing on growing and not trying to sell our produce. And then in exchange for that, they get 24 weeks of produce picked just for them from May through October.
So they get a half a year worth of vegetables.
Right. And then we also have 3 winter programs to extend the season even more so that people can essentially eat local food, local organic food, pretty much all year long.
You were sort of beating the bushes this year for subscribers. What are you doing to hit last year's numbers?
Well, we just started a CSA cooking class for our members. Our feedback that we have received is that they don't know how to prepare all this fresh food. And I can provide them recipes, but if they don't understand the basic skills of roasting and sautéing and that type of thing, we need to go back to the basics.
So, is this a generational thing? Is this millennials not knowing how to cook or not having been told or taught how to cook?
I think that's part of it, but I'm not a millennial, and my generation doesn't really know how to get around in the kitchen very well either, I don't think.
So they're presented with a vegetable, they don't know what to do with it?
Right.
So what do you think about some of these approaches that Katie's doing, Bill?
I think it's necessary. You know, I think part of what's happening is there is a shift in people's expectations. And it seems like once people expect things to be easier, that they don't go back. So if you want the food delivered to your house pre-chopped, it is really hard for you then to get, say, a normal CSA share where you have to do the cooking. And so that, I think that's what we're seeing, is just this general move towards food being easier. But cooking is really one of the most important things people could do for their health, for their family, for the life skills of their kids. So I'm not giving up yet. We really are going to make a push to teach people basic cooking skills, and we think we can help people.
So, Katie, how easy do you have to make it for the CSA subscriber or the farmers market customer for you to be successful?
We'll see this year. I don't know. We haven't actually invested this much time and effort into teaching our consumers. Before, it was just about the connection and the relationship between the farmer, and I would teach them in passing. But I don't want to increase the price of our CSA to cover my expenses, but we'll have to see what happens.
I mean, so you're basically spending more time to get the same result.
Right, exactly.
The same level of income.
Yes.
Recipes. You talked about teaching people to cook. Are you providing them recipes?
Yes. So they get a copy of the cookbook that I wrote for them. It is organized by vegetables. So if they get rutabaga and they don't know what to do with rutabaga, they go to R, the section on R, and they find rutabaga, and it tells them how to store it, preserve it, and cook it. In addition to that cookbook, they also get a weekly newsletter that has links to online recipes plus tips from me.
So it sounds like you're doing everything right, and you're still having to work really hard at this. Bill, what are you finding from farmers who aren't taking the what sound like extraordinary steps that Katie and Hans are doing? What's happening to those farms?
A lot of them are shifting to other markets, so they are going more wholesale. They may add another farmer's market or 2 or 3 to try to make up for that.
And Katie, you have some wholesale as well that's helping to sort of shore up the CSAs and the farmers market markets.
Right, exactly. And so that's why we are so diversified in our marketing outlets, is because if it's a rainy season at the farmers market, we know we can rely on our wholesale accounts or our CSA.
You're dipping your toe into delivery this year. Can you tell me about that?
We invested in a refrigerated delivery truck so that our produce is still really, really fresh, even if it has to travel all the way to Champaign or Springfield. Our CSA members have told us that their schedules are tight and sometimes they can't make the delivery pickup. So we offer that service, that we will drop it off at their house. We are charging extra for that, but just to cover our costs. We're not going to profit on that service.
What about portion size? What do either one of you want to say about the amount of vegetables people get as a member of a CSA?
So this is the hardest part, I feel, as a farmer with the CSA, is that when we send out our surveys, we hear some people say that they're a 2-person family and they can't possibly use it all and they feel guilty for throwing it away. And then I'll have a member with five children who say they aren't getting enough. And so choice has become a more important part of our CSA, allowing them to take as much as they need versus saying, you know, here's a pound of potatoes, see what you can do with it.
So if I were to subscribe to your CSA and it's just my wife and I, we could choose the portions that we, or the number of potatoes or whatever you're providing.
Right.
Of
the staple items.
Yeah.
So we find that there are some items that people need more or less of. The other thing is Hans and I educating our CSA members how to preserve. So you can be in a CSA that lasts 24 weeks, but hopefully you can enjoy that food all year round because you've put it back and you know how to freeze it and can it and that type of thing.
Is there an increased interest in canning or pickling?
I think there was. I think once people realize that it is a little bit of work to do that, and then that's died off a little bit. But
But you can actually extend the life of the food just by doing some overnight pickling as well.
Oh, absolutely, and it's delicious.
Katie touched on this, Bill. What about actually using the food? Do we know how much of the food acquired through a CSA is actually used?
I think it's different for every family. We do know that there is some waste, and that's one of the most stressful parts of being in the CSA. People feel bad about that, but that is why we think if we teach food preservation, we can help to minimize that, because you can freeze almost anything, and it's very simple, extends the usable life of it. We dry a lot of things as well, so making your own dried tomatoes is pretty amazing. All you have to do is cut them up and put them in a dehydrator, or you can use your oven. And then you get this product, which if you ever go into the store and look at a bag of dried tomatoes, they're incredibly expensive. So you can have something really pretty special for not much effort.
Does that guilt play a role in some of the declining numbers, do you think? The guilt of not using the food?
I think it is one factor, but I think what Katie has described, the way they're changing their system, will minimize that.
We've talked about education, making sure people understand how CSAs work, what to do with the food once it's acquired. Katie, you recently held a CSA session at the Normal Public Library. How did that go?
The people that did show up were enthusiastic, and we received a lot of new signups from that class as well. Unfortunately, it wasn't well attended, but we're going to continue to hold classes like that.
But of the number of attendees, about half joined, right?
Right, exactly.
So a great percentage, just not great raw numbers.
Right.
You've surveyed your subscribers. What did you learn from that survey?
Convenience is obviously the biggest issue. They want produce that they know what to do with. And so we talked about what types of vegetables are they not using. That's why we stopped growing okra, actually. You know, a little bit less of the more unconventional greens they don't want and that type of thing.
Bill, we talked about broadening the market for organic farmers. How do farmers make a move to a grocery store or a restaurant or food distributors? Is that sort of where you come in some respects?
We do a lot of programming around that, so there are logistical challenges with shifting from direct marketing, like a farmer's market, to wholesale. And so depending on the scale and the markets, you may have to get various food safety type certifications, which requires training, going through the program, and probably some modifications to your facilities. So there are those sorts of hurdles to get over. But a lot of people have gone through that, and the benefit is the ability to then sell larger quantities of food.
And you're working with a food distributor in Chicago. How was that arrangement arrived at?
We were connected between an educator that was working with them already and introduced us. And so we communicate with them every week. They tell us what they want, and we grow it for them and send it up to Chicago.
So are you taking any cues from Blue Apron? Are your CSAs starting to look more like a complete meal?
So actually, I say that Blue Apron is taking their cue from us.
Okay. All right.
It's been about 5 years that we have partnered with numerous farms around at our CSA pickup. So there is a farmer that raises goats, and so they have goat cheese and gelato. Chad Sanders from the Garlic Press has bread. We have chicken, beef, pork, eggs, honey, flowers, hot sauce. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And so you can get all those items at the CSA pickups. We joke that the only thing you can't get is toilet paper.
So you are banding together in some respects.
Absolutely.
When you think about it for a moment, it doesn't make sense to pay for in-season vegetables to be shipped from California or Texas. There's the transportation costs. There's the cost of irrigation in those climates. It's just not sustainable. How important is it that farmers markets, CSAs, and the farmers who supply all of the produce succeed, Bill?
It's very important. And so what we have seen over the past few years are very direct manifestations of climate change, right? Droughts in California, flooding. So when you take that into account, our region here in the Midwest emerges as one of the principal growing regions in the future, given our soils and our climate. So we are going to be producing more food for people, and we could choose to grow food for direct human consumption and develop that aspect of the food system.
And the percentage of farmland that's in use being used for food for direct human consumption, I assume very small.
It's tiny.
You don't have
the
figure.
I don't know the exact figure. It is single digits. And there's data that has come out recently showing that we could feed every person in Illinois. Every person in the Midwest could be fed within 13 miles of where they live. We could feed every person in Illinois with a tiny fraction of the land. It would not even affect the food system that is in place right now.
The first farmers market's coming up, I think, the first Saturday in May in Bloomington. Are you ready?
Oh, we're ready.
And what are we going to find on the shelves?
We will have many different types of greens, potatoes, carrots, radishes, turnips, lots of garden plants. Just great stuff.
Potato. Beets. So I think of potatoes as a fall vegetable.
Yes. So we are innovative, farmers like us are, and we have above ground root storage. So we are able to take those potatoes that we harvested in October and store them at the prime humidity levels and temperatures so that we can offer them now, too.
And I assume your cookbook's available as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Katie Bishop is a local farmer helping to run Prairie Earth Farms near Atlanta with her husband, Hans. Bill Davison is a local food systems and small farms educator with the University of Illinois Extension. Thanks to both of you for being on Sound Ideas.
Thank you.
Thank you.